Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, October 16th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so. We'll go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as we push through the middle of the week here. Two guests joined me on the program. The first, professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat a little bit of Major League Baseball, then some college football and some NFL with him. Second half of today's show, Wes Reynolds, VSiN host and contributor to the Point Spread Weekly Newsletter. He'll join me to talk some golf, some NFL, and some college football here. So lots of stuff coming your way here on the program. Over at bangthebook.com, lots of stuff coming your way every day. We got Parker Michaels' daily NHL picks, my college football power ratings. We'll have Danny Vorgs' NFL power ratings and model projections either tonight or tomorrow morning. Preview of the CJ Cup at Nine Bridges from James Mazzola. I just got my preview up for this weekend's NASCAR race, as well as this Friday night's UFC card in Boston. So busy morning for me here. A lot of stuff going on. Happy to get all that info out to you nice and early here during the week. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio, presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. Two guests on the program here today. We start things off with professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Looking forward to another huge weekend of football action.
Yeah, you've been doing pretty well here late, huh?
Yeah, having a great football season and can't complain at all. Have a limited amount of plays, maybe, you know, four or five on a Saturday. I only had one last Sunday, and it was a bad one. I had the Rams. It was a 5% play. It's the first 5% we've lost forever, it seems. 30 and 10 now on fives. I do have a five up in college basketball. It's in the MAC, so very confident about this play, and it's up right now over at Wager Talk. But, yeah, the Rams game, it's everything pointed to the Rams. It was a game they needed to have. Short week for San Francisco, and you can handicap the game as well as you possibly can. And if the team just doesn't show up, or you were just playing wrong, which I obviously was in that one, you just got to realize that you're not going to win them all, and you know, go to the next one.
Just to clarify, 5% play this weekend on college football. You said college basketball, which is it's certainly understandable because we talked about this on yesterday's show a little bit. The NBA starts in less than a week, college basketball less than 3 weeks. So, hey, it makes sense you got basketball on the mind here.
Yeah, it actually is. I was reading, our hometown team is the Cleveland Cavaliers, and reading every article I can on the Cavs. And I like the players they have, but I think they weren't very good defensively last year. And I think with the young guys getting a lot more action, they won't be very good this year, even though the players that they had will be better. They've just got so many young players. It's going to be hard for them to gel, especially early in the season. I'll be looking to play some team totals against the Cavs early in the season.
I'll admit, man, I know the NBA starts in 6 days, and we're starting to get some coverage of it over at bangthebook.com. And I will be doing my situational article every week looking at spot plays. And really, for me, that's about all I do in the NBA is kind of look for some of those situational spots where it feels like we can get some edges. I mean, the immense amount of roster turnover in the NBA every offseason, there's a handful of new coaches again. It can be tough to, you know, sort of keep in mind where these guys have gone, especially because all summer long now we're thinking of college football with all the games of the year lines, win totals, all that type of stuff. You and I are both baseball guys. It's tricky to know who went where in the NBA. So, you know, how do you kind of do it early on in the season?
Yeah, that is one of the hardest parts, and not just going to the places. And when a player changes teams, it changes the entire dynamic for the team and that player. In fact, you know, it's not like in baseball where you've basically got nine individual batters coming up to bat. In basketball, you've got a five-man group that what you do has a direct effect on everybody else in the lineup. So you find a certain guys that are like a great, you know, just a spot-up shooter at the three-point line. When LeBron plays, he likes to have those kind of guys. So if one of those guys is gone and they bring in a guy who drives a little bit more as opposed to a spot-up shooter, that's going to take away some of that player's, you know, what he's good at. So you just can't grade a player based on his past performance when he goes to a different team, or in fact, when there are changes made on that team. For example, Sexton for the Cavaliers last year, you know, they didn't really, other than Dellavedova as a backup point guard, they really didn't have a point guard on that team. Now they do have a solid point guard coming out of college. If we can stay injury free, their first round draft pick, number 5 pick. I like this kid as a point guard, which will open up Sexton to do what he does best, and that's get open and shoot the basketball. And for those who are looking at full-time stats last year, Sexton really struggled early on. In fact, he struggled all season defensively, but he became a real scorer as the season went on. And this year, the way the new coaching staff and Beilein is put it out there, that he's going to be a main focus offensively. And say what you want about his defense, but his offense, he can score. He's one of the fastest players in the NBA. So I don't do any fantasy basketball, but anybody is out there and they want to take a flyer on a guy like that, Sexton will give you a lot of points.
Well, I know there are a lot of people out there that may not necessarily like the NBA, but they like betting on the NBA. So we will talk about it here a little bit as the season goes along, as we can kind of work that in. And then, of course, once college football is over, once the NFL is in the playoffs, we'll do a lot more stuff with both college basketball and the NBA here on the show. But Brian, before we get into this week in the NFL, Major League Baseball is still going on. Congratulations to the Washington Nationals and their fans. First time going to the World Series. Only the Seattle Mariners now, a team that has not made it to the World Series out of the 30 current franchises. We've got game 4 expected to go probably tomorrow here in the ALCS. Rain and wind in the forecast in New York. Highly doubt we see that game played tonight. Instead, we'll probably see game 4 tomorrow, game 5 on Friday. So no travel day for the two teams, which, I mean, they're used to that anyway from the regular season. But as far as the rest of this Astros and Yankees series goes, what are you kind of looking for here with Houston now up 2-1?
It all depends on what the matchups are. I couldn't resist yesterday. I put a play on the Yankees. Been splitting in the playoffs so far. I think I'm 4-4, 5-4. I just couldn't resist playing the Yankees at that price range at home with a capable pitcher on the mound. But Gerrit Cole and Verlander, they've been the most amazing two starters on a team that I believe I probably have seen in my entire career. There's been teams that had, you know, the Mets years ago had three really good starters when Gooden was in the lineup and healthy. But these two guys have been so dominant. Once in a while, you'll see one, but two have been so dominant. And it's helped because Greinke has been, let's just say he hasn't had a history of showing up for the big games. And he showed that so far in the playoffs. So if you can go out there and you can trot out the two best pitchers, and, you know, St. Louis's Flaherty's been the one for them. And if he wasn't on, they were done. And we saw that quickly in that series. I do want to remind people, you know, it's too late now, but if a team in a series, a 7-game series, is up 3-0, I'm not going to say blindly bet that team, but there's plenty of value usually on those teams to sweep. Because the other team is embarrassed. They don't want to have to go back home. And it worked out well for St. Louis or Washington yesterday. I bet it. Didn't give it to my clients. That's my own mistake. But if we see that in the future, keep that in mind, especially in basketball when you've got such a disparity between these playoff teams, where, you know, as opposed to baseball, where everybody who makes the playoffs in baseball has a shot to win it. In the NBA, you've only got really six teams in a good year that have a chance to win anything. So if a team is on the precipice of a sweep, bet them, because the other team really, they know their season's over.
Well, and we'll see what happens here the rest of the way with the Astros and the Yankees. But I did mention in my series preview for Cardinals Nationals, I really liked Washington in that series. It was -125, -130 for the series price. Didn't have to sweat that one at all. The Cardinals made a cardinal sin, pardon the pun, using Jack Flaherty in game 5. They went up 10-0. He should have pitched an inning because he got hot. Instead, he winds up throwing over 100 pitches. And everyone goes, yeah, but you got him in game 7 on full rest. You didn't get to game 7. You got one start from Jack Flaherty, your best pitcher. Now, I don't know if he would have pitched game 1 and game 4 if they would have sent him back out there on short rest. But that's where these managerial decisions are really, really magnified And I loved Washington for that reason in that series. Now they advance. And some people have kind of talked about the Nationals and said, oh, it's a bad thing that they won it in four because now they have to sit around and wait. Bullshit, man. They don't have to use Corbin for the next 4 or 5 days. They don't have to use Scherzer for the next 4 or 5 days. Same thing with Strasburg, Doolittle, Hudson. They don't have to use any of those guys now. While the Astros and Yankees keep beating each other up, that was the best case scenario for Washington to get out, get their pitching staff fully engaged now for the World Series. I still don't think that they win it, but man, they got very, very fortunate to win this in four. And what we should see is probably a fairly long series, at least six, from the Astros and Yankees.
Yeah, I agree. Keep in mind, Washington, I think they started the season, what, 19 to 30, something in that range?
Yeah, it's, so like, like the St. Louis Blues, right? From dead last to winning it all. I mean, look at Washington here, making a big run.
Yeah, they started slowly. So they've been in playoff form for a long time, unlike teams like, the Yankees or the especially Houston, who at the end of the season, the last month of the season, Houston was playing a lot of younger players. They were, if they get a lead in the game, they'd rest their starters. They had that ability to do that. Well, Washington's been at it the entire time. So for them to get a few days off here, I think is very beneficial for them, as you mentioned, especially for that rotation, because their bullpen has been so bad this year. Basically, they've used their closer and, other starters in the bullpen in that series. So it's very important for them to get the rest.
Yeah, it really is. And, of course, we'll see what this series price looks like. I believe game one is October 22nd. No matter what happens in the Astros-Yankees series, I don't know if they move that forward or not. I know the NBA, it doesn't matter. Whatever date the series is supposed to start, that's when it starts. And there are huge layoffs in the NBA in the playoffs. I think that game one is October 22nd, no matter what, here for the World Series. But obviously, I think the Astros and Yankees are still going to go pretty deep in that series, too. I wouldn't count New York out at any point here yet because they've gotten through the Gerrit Cole and Verlander starts, and it's only a 2-1 series. So while game four is an absolute must win for them, this series isn't over by a long shot here yet. The one thing I will be kind of interested to see, Brian, I don't know if you have any insight on this or not, but I'll be intrigued to see how this World Series is lined. Obviously, Houston or New York a favorite. They'll have home field advantage no matter what as well. But with Washington getting that sweep, looking as good as they have, knocking off the Dodgers, that's very impressive. And now all this rest for their starters, I kind of wonder if it leads to a little bit of a depressed series price on the AL teams, which would probably push me in that direction.
Yeah, I agree. If Washington would have had to go the seven and they weren't able to set up their rotation, that would have made a major difference because the drop off from the first two to three is pretty steep there. So now they can start the two big guys, games one and two, bring them back four or five. You may even see somebody at game seven. So it helps when you've got a veteran like a Verlander who has pitched 200 innings virtually every year of his career. When you get to be that age, you don't have to worry about babying yourself like they Washington did with Strasburg a few years ago. Verlander's like, give me the damn ball and let me go out there, and you're going to get at least six good innings from him. So Washington is in very good shape in that regard. And I'm with you. I thought the American League was going to win the World Series. But with Washington being able to set up their lineup like that with the rotation, that's going to be a huge benefit because we've already seen how, for example, Houston and the Yankees have struggled against aces. So when you can send out aces for maybe five games in that World Series, it's definitely going to be an advantage for Washington.
And especially here for Washington, if you need to use a guy on 3 days rest, now you can do it because, those guys haven't had as big of a workload as Cole and Verlander are going to wind up with. And also here for Washington, Strasburg and Scherzer, both right-handed. Houston, very right-handed heavy lineup. New York, pretty right-handed heavy lineup as well. So, we'll see. I mean, I think that Washington can make the World Series interesting. And again, I'm hoping for some Washington steam there to drive that price down a little bit. Because I do think, ultimately, Astros versus Yankees is actually the World Series. But, we'll see how the Nationals do wind up faring there, depending on how the rotation sets up, especially for Houston. If Cole and Verlander are needed again here in this series, and at least one of them probably will be, it'll be interesting to see how that whole thing sets up for the World Series. But as we transition over to the football side of things here, this portion of Bang the Book Radio presented by the Trends app, T-R-N-D-S, the mobile app available for iOS only. However, you can go to the website, trnds-sports.com. Find a lot of good trends. And also, you can run your own queries. And that's very important to do, because if you're trying to find this information somewhere else, it's difficult, it's time-consuming, it can be frustrating to see how these teams do coming off of a loss, how they fare in certain weather conditions, under a specific spread range, after a bye. We've got the double bye in college football this year, every team getting two byes. We've got the byes going on in the NFL here as well. How do teams fare in those situations? You can find that using the Trends app or using the Trends website. What this app and what this website do is simplify access to powerful data. And again, you can self-source, find the trends that you want to find, and of course, you can share them from your mobile phone with people who you think are going to benefit from this as well. You can identify new betting angles. You can create your own views on the game. It's a very important product, something very, very useful for you. And in fact, if you want, you can get a free month of the app's premium subscription tier by being one of the first 100 users to sign up over at trendsports.com/bangthebook. Again, that's trnds-sports.com/bangthebook. And of course, you can check out the App Store if you're an iOS user. That's TRNDS, the Trends app. So, Brian, like I said, we'll transition over to the football side of things here now, and we'll start over on the college side. College football begins again tonight here with South Alabama and Troy. Troy up to a 17-point favorite now. I guess that means Caleb Barker is probably going to play in tonight's game. I do like South Alabama a little bit at the 17-point price. Any thoughts on tonight's game from you?
No, and you're right. He is coming back. He's going to be playing in tonight's game. I made the line 16. Plenty of other games on the board where I think I have an advantage. So I'll be passing on that football game tonight and concentrate more on the rest of the weekend.
All right, so as we go from week 7 to week 8 here, again, we've crossed, really essentially we've crossed the midpoint of the regular season here. Week 16 reserved for Army and Navy. Week 15, all the conference championship games. Now that we're halfway through the season, does anything change for you, or are we too early to start looking at lame duck head coaches, teams that won't go to a bowl, all that type of stuff?
No, I don't have anything like that. At this point, I'm not making too many major adjustments. One thing I do want to point out, I haven't heard a lot of people talk about it, is when you have a first-year head coach in college football and you're coming off of a bye, those are probably the biggest advantage for those teams that you'll find in college football this time of the season, because obviously you got that extra week to mend up your injured players. But if you're a new coach, you didn't get a chance to put in everything you wanted earlier in the season. So having that bye week, you go back and chart it. Teams coming off the bye week with a first-year coach come out with a new lease on life, especially if they're off to a poor season start, and you can catch value on those. As for, you know, looking at power ratings and what we've done for power ratings, I have found, and it's kind of funny, if you don't make your own power ratings, you wouldn't know this, but the sports books at this point are just begging for action on the worst teams in college football. You look at teams like your Akron's, your UMass, your Connecticut's, just the teams that have been getting crushed all season long. Those teams right now, their spreads are probably 3 or 4 points higher than what they should be. And they're just begging for action on it. Now, the good part is we don't have to play against bad teams. We don't want to. But at least at this point, if you're into looking for value and you could find a favorite that is in a down spot that is playing one of those teams, you're getting tremendous value.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And this is also the point in time where, you know, you've got teams that maybe struggled against an FCS opponent or maybe lost a game that they shouldn't have. They're still being penalized for it. So that's another thing you can keep an eye out for out there in the marketplace. I agree with you that, you know, you look this week, Buffalo's too big of a favorite at Akron. You know, you mentioned UConn. They were too big of a home dog against Houston. We're seeing both of those lines move A little bit. Again, it's a very tough bet to make, and certainly something where you kind of question that team's motivation level the rest of the way. But yeah, from a line value standpoint, it's definitely out there. And, you know, it's also one of those things too, where you want to go through and look at the ATS standings here, where teams that are, you know, 5-1, 6-0, 5-2, stuff like that against the spread. Those are teams you probably want to look to go against too, because there's definite inflation in the marketplace. I mean, I look at a game like Friday, for example, with Ohio State and Northwestern. I don't think I can take Northwestern, but my line's only in the 23 range for that game. Ohio State's just been so good, and Northwestern's offense has been so bad. That line looks inflated by a few points.
It definitely is. My line is 24, and anytime I have a differential, I put a little check mark next to it. But then I went in to start handicapping the game, and we know how explosive Ohio State is. Northwestern is probably the least explosive offense in the league. So, you know, a lot of people will say that their power ratings are gold, but when I look at my power ratings, it's a beginning point for me, and then you have to handicap the game from there. And it's clear that it's not a good matchup for Northwestern against Ohio State. It would be tough for me to see Northwestern getting more than 10 points in this game, and that may be a stretch. So if they fall behind early, which you would expect, and have to pass the ball a little bit, playing right into the hands of Ohio State, it could get ugly in a hurry.
Yeah, I did a video for this game over on our Bang the Book YouTube page, and that was kind of my thought too. You know, maybe looking at Ohio State first half, trying to put this thing away with Wisconsin on deck, Northwestern team total under, something like that. You know, finding creative ways to try and extract as much value as you can from some of these games. And, you know, also too, we're going to get some games like this the rest of the way. You know, I would rather take a team that's got a decent offense in a big underdog role like this, as opposed to hoping Northwestern can slow down Ohio State. Give me a team that has a chance of moving the football, as opposed to a team that's hoping to just kind of hold on.
Yeah, I agree. If you've got a team that has the ability to move the football, they're never out of the game. But if you have a team that struggles to move the football and the defense, you know, is obviously overwhelmed early, you're putting the team in a position where they just don't excel. So that's something you always got to take a look at and try to figure out how you think the game is going to be played. Now, if the Northwestern defense just comes out and plays terrific, and you know, that's the best part of their team is their defense, then they're in this game all the way through. But if they fall behind early, it could get really ugly. Although Ohio State with Wisconsin on deck may end up pulling some starters, but still, Ohio State recruits as good as anybody, and the guys sitting on the bench will be able to pick up where the starters leave off.
And that's one of those things too. You know, I know that this is something that I think Rolf Michaels has talked about before, and something Brian Blessing has talked about from a college basketball standpoint. You know, Ohio State does still play Rutgers. So it's not like, you know, Gunnar Hoke and Chris Chuganoff aren't going to have a chance to get into a game. They also still play Maryland, could very well get into that one. But, you know, when the backups and the bench guys and the walk-ons and the water boys get a chance to play in college basketball, they're going to go out there and chuck. They're going to go out there and play as if, you know, their hair's on fire. I would think for Ohio State here in a spot like this too, two senior quarterbacks, you don't know what's going to happen the rest of the way. They played three, you know, essentially top 15 teams in Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan. They may go out there and run their offense in the second half with those senior transfer quarterbacks and Chuganoff and Hoke. So, excuse me. So keep that in mind over the rest of the season here where, yeah, some of these teams may empty the bench in the second half in a look-ahead spot, but also they may give those guys a chance to go out there and play. So don't just assume it's a stone-cold dead nut under in the second half or anything like that, because it may not be.
That's true. The only time I tend to look to play an under is if a team is throwing a shutout. The bench players want to preserve the shutout, so it's a different situation. But, yeah, if it's not a shutout coming out of the half, you have to take that into consideration.
All right, so as you look at a few games here on the college football side, hopefully this isn't your premium in the MAC. If it is, we can pivot to a different game. But Kent State and Ohio here, game 345-346. Ohio a 7.5-point favorite here in this game. Total of 61. Total's gone up from 59.5. If this isn't your premium game for this weekend, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, we were talking about earlier about your power ratings just being a base. My power rating in this game has Ohio minus 10. That said, when I take a look at the strength of schedule between these two and how Kent and Ohio have played, the game obviously makes a lot of sense for being a lower number. From a game grade standpoint, Kent State is at 77.8, whereas Ohio is 76.2, which is a 1.6. Which is good, but take a look at the teams that they have played. UC Kent State has played Arizona State on the road, Auburn on the road, Wisconsin on the road. The only problem is this is their third straight road game, although last week they played at Akron, 17 miles away, I believe. So that's not really a true road game. You know, they were back and forth on a bus, but you know, they played some really good teams. When you take a look at Ohio U, their toughest teams have been Pittsburgh, Marshall, and Louisiana. So for Ohio to have lesser game grades against a much easier schedule tells me that Kent in this game has a real chance. My power rating says 10, currently at 7.5, but I would, if I had, would play this game, which I won't, I would have to lean towards Kent as long as I'm getting that hook on the 7.
Yeah, you and I are in the same spot here. Both of us with the game power rated at 10, both of us with a little bit of a lean towards the Kent State side. And, you know, I was a little bit surprised to see a lot of 7.5s pop back up on this game. But again, if our number is 10, I imagine a lot of people out there in the 9, 10, 11 range, something like that. So why the hook is back on this game? But I see two programs going in different directions. I see Kent State on the rise, I see Ohio on the decline. And Ohio's defense this year has been abominable. I mean, this is a defense that's usually very good year in and year out. They've got one player on offense in Nathan Rourke who does basically everything for them. They're not stopping anybody. So even though my power rating is 10 here, I've already taken Kent State plus 7.5. And I do think that they've got a very live chance at winning this game outright in Athens.
I agree. The MAC, I said it all season long, the MAC is really down this year. Ohio was expected to run away with that division. I don't know if it was complacency in the offseason by reading the press and knowing that you were by far the best team in that division, but they just have not played well this year, which is really strange because they've got one of the better coaches, at least the most experienced coach in the league. And yeah, it's been a definitely down year for Ohio U.
It's been a down year for the MAC in general, as you mentioned, and I've found almost week after week that I've got some sort of power ratings overlay on at least two of these games in the MAC, because I guess overall, I just don't know how to really rate these teams because the usual class of the conference is down. I mean, we saw Toledo lose last week as a 26-point favorite at Bowling Green. Ohio is struggling mightily. Ball State's been playing really well. I don't know what Northern Illinois is, and it's week eight of the season. Every week, I've got an overlay or two on this conference, and makes me wonder if something's wrong with me, but I think it's just something wrong with these teams.
Yeah, definitely. We saw it before the season started. I still don't know who the best team in this conference is, and I can't wait to bet against these teams once they get to a bowl game. The MAC has traditionally been a lousy bet when it comes to the bowl games, when teams have a lot of time to prepare for them. You've got to realize that you know, when the MAC is in action, they're preparing for each other, but when they play outside the conference, you can definitely tell how weak this MAC is this year. And even if even when the team wins the MAC, that's not much to say this year, because I followed the MAC since I was back in college, graduated Akron in '85, and I can't think of a season in which the league was this poor, and it definitely is bad this year. I mean, there's when you're looking at you're looking at the final 10 ranked teams in college football, and three or four of them are MAC schools, you know it's not a good season.
No, it's definitely not. And we move on here to game 417, 418. In fact, I woke up to a text message from one of our listeners about this game here about 7 in the morning. So I guess it was on somebody's mind. So I figure why not throw it on the show here today. Game 417, 418 is Temple and SMU. SMU, a 7.5-point favorite here, ranked in the top 25. You know, a team that's played very, very well all season long. And I think that on the surface, this number is going to look light to a lot of people.
My number is 6. but I don't want to play on Temple here. I don't like to play on teams who won the previous week and probably didn't deserve it. They got that win against Memphis 30-28. They were outgained in that game, out first downed in that game. They won the turnover battle by two. Overall, not overly impressed, even though they got that victory. SMU, I believe, had a bye last week, and then they played Tulsa the week before and struggled with Tulsa. Major comeback in that game. So that was sort of a scare for SMU. Had the week to prepare here. My number says six, but once again, it's just a base, and I lean with SMU here, but I doubt if I'll get there.
Yeah, my number's 5.5 on this one. And you talk about bye weeks, and sometimes they come at really bad times. Sometimes they come at really good times. That was a very well-timed bye for SMU. Coming off that triple overtime game and the comeback against Tulsa, the next week would have been a very tough game for them. But instead, they get the week off. That should help them tremendously here in this one. If I had to play it, if I was in a spread pool or something like that, I'd probably take SMU minus 7.5, even though it goes against my numbers. Temple's one of those teams, I don't know what to do with them week in and week out either. So that's kind of the theme, I guess, here in college football, where you got really good, really bad, and everything in between almost seems interchangeable week to week.
Yeah, that's true. It all comes down to spot plays a lot of times in college football. And I always try to put myself in the position of the players. Am I excited to play this game? Do I want to come out and prove something? Or is this a game I'll overlook? And every week is different. We've seen in the NFL all the time, a team that's dominant one week, a couple weeks later, they look like they're a mess. Same thing that happens in college, probably more often, because we're dealing with a lot of younger kids here.
All right, so I'm curious to get your thoughts on this game here. Game 421-422, Michigan and Penn State. If you have a Penn State ticket from the summer, congratulations, because Penn State was a 4.5 or 5-point home underdog in this game. So a 2-touchdown swing, essentially, based on what we've seen here so far this season with these two teams. Late game, primetime, ABC kickoff, big handle coming. Penn State up to a 9-point favorite.
I made this line 9. I also feel that Penn State is off of a game that they didn't deserve to win. They win that game against Iowa 17-12, took advantage of a +2 turnover advantage. They were outgained by 62 yards, out first down. So that game could have gone either way. You take a look at Michigan, and a lot of people are still basing Michigan on the first three games against Middle Tennessee, Army, and Wisconsin. At that point, they were as low as they could be, and we came back and they played Rutgers, Iowa, and Illinois since, and they've been good. They've been much better. They still aren't to the point where we expected them to be on the season. The run defense has still been very good. They're only allowing 3 yards a carry on the ground, so the run defense has probably been the best part of this Michigan team. But you know, Michigan is still down on the season in turnovers. They've only won the turnover battle once all season, and that was in that Iowa game that they probably didn't deserve. They were +3 in that Iowa game and win by 7. That's pretty telling. Also telling that Michigan is supposed to be a physical team, and so far they played the likes of Middle Tennessee, Army, and Rutgers and didn't have a turnover advantage in any of those games. That to me tells you all you need to know about this Michigan team. It's not when you're normally talking Michigan, you're talking physical defense, a team that controls the ball and doesn't turn the ball over. Well, that's just opposite of what Michigan has been this year. Penn State, on the other hand, they've only had one game all year, the Purdue game, in which they lost the turnover battle. They lost that by 2, and they still won by 28. So that tells me that Penn State is clearly the better team here. And when you look at the Penn State games on the season, the only two games where they were below par was that 45-13 win over Buffalo. They were actually outgained in that game. And then when they played Pittsburgh and won that game 17-10, they were also slightly outgained in that game. But the other games they played, especially when they played Maryland and crushed Maryland, that was very impressive. The Purdue win was very impressive. Last week against Iowa, played a good game. Like I said, it could have been a coin flip game, but they got out of there with the win. Penn State was one of those teams coming into the season. You either loved them or hated them. The loving Penn State people are having a good season right now.
Yeah, they really are. My line here is only 7, but I can't trust Michigan. I don't think Penn State's as good as this line would suggest. But at the same time, Michigan, okay, fine. Getting right against Illinois and Rutgers is, you know, it is what it is. Go out there and play against a better team or a team at least on your level. Then we'll see what this team actually has. Hey, the one thing that will be really interesting here is if Michigan loses and fails to cover the number, what happens with that look-ahead line against Ohio State Thanksgiving weekend? It's going to keep going up, and it's already double digits. So that's what I'm kind of interested to look at here for this one. Again, like you mentioned earlier on in the segment, a lot of other games on the board, so that's one that I don't have to be too interested in. I do want to spend a couple of minutes here on some NFL games real quick, Brian, and let's start with game 457, 458, Minnesota and Detroit. Small flipped favorite scenario here. Detroit was -1. Minnesota -1, -1.5 now. Any thoughts on this game?
Not really. I haven't done a lot in the NFL this week as I concentrate on whatever is closest for my clients to be interested in, which is the college football. Minnesota really has got all the talent in the world, but we've talked about them when they play a winning team. Last week against Philadelphia, they looked really good. They took advantage of the Philadelphia secondary. And that's what you've got to do when you've got two outstanding receivers that Minnesota has. I did not watch that game on I believe it was Monday night with excuse me, Detroit and Green Bay. I was working on basketball, but I think the line's probably, in my opinion, it's probably about where it is. Matt Patricia has gotten a lot of grief since he's been the head coach in Detroit, but the guy covers against the spread. I believe he's at 60%. So he's done pretty well with the Lions. So, they're off of a couple of tough losses to Kansas City and Green Bay. I guess I would lean a little bit with Detroit here, but not enough to make a selection.
Yeah, I think it's tough, especially coming off the Monday Night Football game. The narrative, of course, being that the Lions were robbed by the referees. And then, quite frankly, maybe they were. But, you know, still a tough game here. Back-to-back division games on a short week. Definitely a tough spot for Detroit. So you mentioned that you're kind of looking at things that are, you know, coming closer here. So we'll roll back a little bit on the card. The Thursday night game, Kansas City and Denver, 303-304. Kansas City now down to a field goal favorite. Any thoughts on this one?
I'm looking to play Kansas City here, but it all comes down to the injury list. I don't know if I trust Denver at home. You take a look at the teams they played. In fact, over the entire season, especially the last 3 weeks, Jacksonville, the Chargers, Tennessee, not overly impressive in those games. They were still able to get victories in the last two. But Kansas City from a, I guess you take a look at it, excuse me, from a high and a low standpoint. From a low standpoint, Denver could stay in this game. But if both teams play their best, I think Kansas City has the ability to blow them out. From what I understand, they're getting some players back, but it's too early in the week for me to step out on this in that regard. I'll read more on it today and tomorrow, but if Kansas City could get some of those players back that they've had injured, Kansas City's the side I prefer here. Denver's not a team that I trust if they fall behind in this game, that they could come back and match points. And that's always a concern. It's similar to what we talked about with the Northwestern. If it's a close game early on, I think they're in the game all the way. It's probably a better game for me to use some live betting on and take a look at it from that way. But I'm probably going to pass in playing this before the games go off.
Brian Leonard, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there right now, man?
Like I said, I've got that 5% play up there right now, 30-10 on our 5-star releases. I'm very, very, I don't put out a lot of 5% releases. So when I do, you know, it's a quality play. The Lions move slightly on this so far, but still plenty of value here on our 5% play. It's in the MAC. And as I said, I'm a 1985 Akron graduate, follow the MAC very closely. So If anybody's interested in that, you can pick that up with 150% guarantee over there. If it doesn't cover your number, you get 150% of what you paid for it back into your account. So that's always a benefit that nobody else out there does. Over at Wager Talk, we do that. Going in to do videos tonight. I'm doing Sports Grid tonight for 2 hours, a live betting show at the internet and some various stations. Zumo, XUMO.com, I believe, is one of them. We're going to be on Pluto. We're going to be on Slang. So that's building up. But right now, just a full day. This is my busiest day of the week.
There you go. You can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. And, of course, check out Brian Leonard's work at WagerTalk.com as well. Brian, appreciate the time as always, sir. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Good talking to you. And everybody have a nice winning week.
All right, there you go. There was professional handicapper Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Again, at BLeonardSports on Twitter. And check out that 5% play here in the MAC for college football on Saturday. We got one more guest, one more segment left for this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is with Wes Reynolds, at Wes Reynolds, the number one on Twitter, host on VSiN, and contributor to the Point Spread weekly newsletter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you, brother?
Doing very well, buddy. Appreciate your time as always here. And we'll try to keep this short and sweet. Wes, coming over, getting over a little bit of dental work there. So still a little bit sore, and we'll try not to have him talking too much here on today's show. But Wes, as far as the college football card here for week 8, as I mentioned in the previous segment, we're more than halfway through the college football season here. Do you start looking ahead to lame duck head coaches, teams that aren't going to make a bowl game, or are we too early for that?
We might be a little too early for that because, I mean, we've seen teams, I think every year there's a few teams that do get off to kind of bad starts, and then maybe they played a really tough non-conference and now they're getting into the conference, and I guess the drop in class. So you can get some of these teams. Now, that's especially, I think, in maybe some of the non-Power Fives where, okay, now we're playing more competition on our level. You know, if you're like a MAC team or Sun Belt or the American Athletic Conference, Mountain West, those type of conferences. Now, the SEC, it's a tough game every week. Or even to some degree in the Big Ten, Rutgers excluded from that. But you pretty much got to come to play every week. So the losses can really, I guess, kind of mount up, if you will.
All right, so we look at a couple of teams here that I don't think they're really where they expected to be. We didn't have a line on this game on Monday when we talked about it with Kyle Hunter on our College Football First Look segment. Well, we've got a line here now. UCLA and Stanford. Stanford, we're starting to see some 6.5s leak out there into the market at BetOnline and Bookmaker, at least as far as the offshore market goes. Certainly, as you know, shop around for the best prices wherever your jurisdiction is. But you've got a UCLA team here at 1-5 on the season, coming off of some extra prep time, though. A Stanford team that, look, week in and week out, we don't know what we're going to get from them. They're bad enough to get blown out by some teams. They're good enough to beat Washington. What do you think about this Thursday night game here in the Pac-12?
I think that's just really the Pac-12 now. You don't know what you're going to get. It kind of reminds me of that few years ago, and it's probably going to apply this year in the Coastal Division of the ACC, that ACC Wheel of Destiny, where a team wins one week and then looks like the worst team in the conference the next week. So I think that's a little bit what you're seeing here. And look, Stanford got a nice win over Washington, and really it was probably a wider margin than the final score indicated at 23-13. I mean, they really probably should have beat them by more. Washington was just poor, and then you saw them get bet against a lot of support for Arizona last week, and Washington pretty much controlled the game and easily covered the point spread. But I think that may be what you see here with UCLA, and there's still some sevens out there as well. I think having that week off, I don't think UCLA has really been that bad. I mean, they were in that competitive game against Arizona that could have went their way and just happened to go Arizona's way. I don't think that they're that bad now. Thompson Robinson is questionable, but I thought that backup for UCLA did a solid job. And Stanford, of course, is still without Costello. I don't necessarily think that win over Washington is a real buy sign, to be honest with you. I just think it's got to product of the parity, or if you will, in the Pac-12, that no one is really that great. I mean, maybe Oregon is pretty good, and they've been blowing out some teams. So maybe Oregon and Utah are still kind of look like the, I guess what you would say are the clear two best teams, but that's just what it's going to be really in the Pac-12. I mean, you're going to see Arizona, like when you had Arizona State lose at home to Colorado, and then the next week they go win at Cal. And I just think that that's what you're going to get here. So 7 seemed a little high here for me.
Well, of course, we'll find out about Oregon here this week when they go up to Seattle and take on Washington. A few other games that are kind of on your radar here this week. Game 321-322, Clemson is at Louisville. A lot of people like Louisville here of late. Scott Satterfield doing a great job with the offense. They're fully invested. They're fully engaged. You can kind of see that play out where they've been a pretty good team here so far this year. You're kind of interested in laying the number, though.
Well, I mean, I'm more interested in the under, to be honest with you. And it's at 60.5. There might be a 61 out there, because I'm not sure what we're going to have with Louisville's quarterback. Puma Pass has been out for a few weeks with a foot injury. And then they went with Mikhail Cunningham. He went out of the game last week. They were playing two quarterbacks. So Evan Conley, the true freshman, got a lot of the work and did a pretty solid job in that absolute score fest in a shootout at Wake Forest last week, where I think that was like the second highest scoring game in ACC history, 65-62, I believe, was the final score. And if Conley is a go, you now have a Clemson team that does have him on film and can be fully prepared for it. And look, Clemson really held Florida State under, it got a little scary at the end because Florida State got a couple cosmetic scores, but they were up 42-0 in the third quarter and took Lawrence and ATN and some of the starters out. Really what's been carrying the team, I mean, I don't think Trevor Lawrence has been bad, but he hasn't put up the dominant numbers that like Tua or Justin Fields have put up at Alabama and Ohio State respectively. So the offense is still pretty darn good, but the defense, that's what's been surprising to me, is the fact that, look, you get Clemson with 3 defensive starters just on the defensive line get drafted in the first round of the NFL draft in the spring, and we've seen how that's affected Mississippi State, as their defense has really taken kind of a bit of a nosedive this season. But at Clemson, they don't really rebuild, they reload on defense, and that's exactly what they've done. They're 3rd in total defense, only allowing about 255 yards a game. They're 2nd in passing yards allowed, only allowing 150 yards a game. And then the scoring defense tied for 6th, only giving up an average of 12 points per game. So I would lean more toward the under. I think, look, you know Clemson, you assume they're going to get their 40 points and whatnot. But and I think this total got a little inflated on the opener, too, last year, because people remember that Clemson put up 77 on Louisville last year. It was 77-16. Bobby Petrino was going to be well on his way out. That was probably what I think convinced Louisville to go ahead and cut bait and show him the door. But that I think plays into this total a little bit. But I think that, look, Louisville at least has a pulse and at least is competitive. So I don't think that they're rolling over and kind of quitting like they did last year against Clemson. And then you had a Clemson that was playing with a bit of a sense of urgency in terms of running up some scores, and they could certainly do that here. But I'm a little more interested in the under. When I made my numbers, I had this total of like 54. So thought that there was a little high, and that's the side I would lean to here.
My mistake here. I do see in the notes that you mentioned Clemson under as opposed to the Clemson side. So my mistake there, and I think you're on the right track with all your thoughts on that game. Couple other side plays I want to take a look at here, and this is one that interests me actually too, so I want to get your take on it. 389-390, Baylor and Oklahoma State. This line's now up to 3.5 out there in the market, and even some 4s starting to show up. You like the Oklahoma State side here, and I'm with you on this one.
Yeah, I do, and I mean, you could always lay money line too if you're worried about. If you
might let me stop you for a second real quick, because you've been talking a lot about those short money lines lately in the three and a half type of range. What's the thought process there?
Yeah, I mean, if you just miss a key number, and I like the spot anyway, and I don't think that number, if you don't get three, is necessarily as bad as you would think in the NFL. I mean, where the numbers are a little bit tighter, so I don't think you necessarily have to worry. I mean, you obviously don't want to chase a bad number anywhere, but I don't think that you have to worry if you necessarily miss the three on this game. So if you want to lay the short favorite money line, which I think would probably be around, if it's around three, it's usually around $1.65, $1.70 or somewhere around there. But you look at the Oklahoma State side here, and look, this offense is always good. It doesn't matter who plays quarterback, really, for Mike Gundy and company. They're eighth in the country in total offense, averaging about 528 yards a game. Rushing offense is ranked seventh. So they've tried to be a little bit more balanced. They're averaging about 40 points a game. The defense is not great, but not a total disaster. We've seen some bad defenses at Oklahoma State, and this is kind of just par for the course. They're in a lot of high-scoring games, and that's also probably the product of the Big 12, rather. But look, Baylor was life and death last week. They got ranked, and usually, like, when a team gets ranked, when they're out of the top 25, but they're in that also receiving votes category, those are teams that I like to bet on because they know that they're close to being ranked, and they still have a chip on their shoulder, and they're still out to prove something. And that's what you saw with Baylor when they were able to go to Kansas State and win on the road, even though Kansas State took some money. I think Baylor ended up being a short favorite in that game. So they were able to easily win in Manhattan. Then last week, they did drop that touchdown that would have won them the game in regulation. And then, of course, go to overtime and eventually the second overtime. So that was one of the bad beats of the week, I guess, if you were on the under in that Baylor-Texas Tech game. But now they're getting into a test here. They're 6-0. This is probably the toughest game that they've played because the toughest team that they have played so far is Iowa State. Got them at home and almost blew the lead late. Had to get a field goal in the final seconds to win the game. But now you get a little bit more of a test because Baylor's non-conference was fairly pedestrian. Stephen F. Austin, UTSA, Rice. So now you're going to an Oklahoma State team that's 4-2, kind of trying to stay in the race because they don't have divisions in the Big 12 like the other conferences. So it's essentially the top two teams. So a lot of these teams are still live for that second spot, assuming Oklahoma is going to get one of those spots because they clearly look like the best team in the conference. But I think Baylor has put up some good numbers. And look, I think Matt Rhule's done a good job, but Baylor has put up some numbers against a little bit lesser competition. And I think they take a step up in class here. So I would lay the short price with the Cowboys.
I agree with everything you said. And also, I bumped Oklahoma State up in my power ratings earlier on in the year. I've got this one closer to a touchdown. So I think Oklahoma State definitely the side here in this one. One more game I want to take a look at here on the college side, just because I think this one's interesting and maybe a game that won't get a whole lot of play. 405-406, Louisiana Monroe and Appalachian State. App State, of course, on extra prep time coming off that win last Wednesday against Louisiana, formerly known as Louisiana Lafayette. App State's more than a 2-touchdown favorite here, though, and you've got some interest in the dog.
I do, and I thought that this was a little bit high, not a huge price discrepancy, but Appalachian State, clear, I think, the class of the Sun Belt. They were the best team last year, and they look like the best team this year, and they really impressed me, actually, going to Lafayette, I think it was last Wednesday night, and only holding them to 7 points. That's a really explosive offense they got down there, and Appalachian State was able to kind of slow down the game and make it a grinder game and grind out first downs when it looked like Lafayette would have them off the field and just win ugly, I guess, if you will, or win very conventional. But now they're ranked in the top 25, and that's what I talked about. These teams that are outside of the top 25, they really play well because they're fighting for that respectability and they want that national recognition. Now they finally have it. They're already considered the top team in the league, and rightfully so. But when you get that ranking next to your name, you become a little bit, there's even more of a target on your back, I guess. And I think that that's what it is with Appalachian State. All of a sudden, the stakes become bigger for their opponents. It's not just about getting into the conference championship game or winning the division. You've now got a chance to beat a ranked team. And Louisiana Monroe, look, they've played some really tough competition. And I think one of the reasons this line is so high is if you recall a few weeks ago, they played at Iowa State, and it was a relatively competitive game for a half, and then it really got out of control. They ended up losing 72-20 at Iowa State. So that's a very ugly score, and people remember that, and that, of course, gets priced in the line. This team also almost beat Florida State in overtime in Tallahassee. I know Florida State's not great, but that's still would have been a big win if you were Louisiana Monroe. And instead of going for two, they kicked the extra point, which of course was blocked. And then they lose by one there. They were covering against Memphis. Memphis got a real late cover down there at Louisiana Monroe. So they've played a lot of tougher competition, and Appalachian State, I know, played at North Carolina and got the win, but I think they've played a little bit easier of a schedule. Monroe has the top 30 offense nationally. Now their defense is ranked very low, largely because those numbers get skewed, because when you give up 72 points and close to 700 yards to Iowa State. But I think that was at least a small outlier here. And you get an Appalachian State team that's now kind of feeling themselves a little bit, and the fact that they're now ranked. The offense is still, especially on the ground, is still pretty solid. Keep in mind, they got a new coach with Satterfield now in Louisville. They got Elijah Drinkwitz, who is the OC and the quarterback coach at NC State, who also calls his own plays and serves as his own offensive coordinator in Boone. But now they're feeling themselves a little bit. Last year, they were a top 10 in terms of the statistics, national defense. This year, it slipped. They're in about the mid-60s. I mean, look, they gave up 37 to Coastal Carolina. They gave up 41 to Charlotte. These are teams that are relatively new to FBS football, have only been up for like a couple years. I think this may be the first or second year for Coastal Carolina. But, yeah, I just thought that maybe as like a real big favorite like this, you can find a little value going against them. And now you're seeing, you saw a drop earlier in the week, but now you've got Monroe, I think about 15 or 15 and a half. And I think they're worth a shot here over a perhaps fat and happy Appalachian State club.
Yeah, I got this line 15 in my power ratings, but for all the reasons you mentioned, I'm pretty interested in Monroe here this week. I had Monroe against Memphis a couple weeks ago. That was a 68-yard touchdown run and a pick six on back-to-back plays that turned that into a Memphis cover. And like I said, I had the Warhawks there in that one. So maybe looking to go back on the Warhawks here in this one this week. We'll transition over to the NFL side here to finish out the segment. And 463-464, I think, is a real compelling game between the Rams and the Falcons. Not a compelling game, but a compelling handicap with two teams going very clearly in the wrong direction here. McVay is completely safe. We know that. Dan Quinn will get fired, whether it's during the season or after the season, unless something really dramatically changes here for the Falcons. What are you thinking about this early kickoff here in the Dome down in Atlanta?
Yeah, and I would be leaning to Atlanta here. If you recall, last week, I mean, Matt Ryan threw for, I think, 360 yards and four touchdowns, high completion. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. But did the job, didn't throw a pick, and they still found a way to lose. And it's kind of maybe a little bit more of a fate of the Rams, because I was really disappointed with that team last week, and I was wrong on that handicap, because I thought that they were going to get the 49ers in that spot. And credit to the 49ers. I mean, they're proving that they're for real, especially that defense. That defense absolutely pounded the Rams' offensive line, and their offensive line really pounded the Rams' defensive line. That's what really shocked me, was how easily the 49ers won that game in the trenches against the Rams. And look, Atlanta has got some offensive line issues. They've had a bunch of guys hurt. They've had to do a lot of reshuffling, but it's more of a play on a team where I don't think that the other team, even with Aaron Donald on that defensive line, that I don't know if the other team can really exploit their offensive line issues. And the power ratings are going to all say Rams. And I think people will bet on the fact that maybe, hey, going on the road here, get some refocused, and perhaps they're right. But as of this time, I would lean to the Atlanta side. I couldn't really have the confidence in the Rams here, even as such short road favorites.
I got to say, I know you and I both go through the contest struggle week in and week out. I do not like this card at all. You've got a lot of teams just going in the wrong direction here, whether they're short favorites or short dogs. You've got some teams that are a mess going head to head, like the Chargers and the Titans. I don't know how Chicago looks coming off the bye. I know everybody wants to fade Bridgewater, but all he's done is beat everybody the last 3 weeks. This is not a particularly great card. And when you look at kind of a game that sort of embodies that, Baltimore and Seattle here, game 469-470, a game where I don't really know what to do here, but it seems like you've got a lean that you do like early in the week.
Yeah, and you're so right. Just getting back before we get to the game, getting back to what you're saying in terms of finding these plays, because we wonder, look, NFL underdogs are now 53-36-2 against the spread this season. That's just overall underdogs. That doesn't decide whether it's home or away or what have you. And they were 10-4 last week. And you keep wondering when maybe, because usually that's going to regress. I mean, at least a little bit to the mean. So you're wondering which week that's going to come, if it's going to come this week or next week. But back to this situation. Yeah, I do like the Ravens if you're getting 3 in the hook or even a little bit more here. Seattle, I thought, they weren't really outstatted in Cleveland, but I thought they got kind of fortunate to win that game. They got some breaks. Cleveland, I think, made some mistakes, so maybe some questionable decision-making from Freddie Kitchens, or as my VSiN colleague Matt Humans calls him, Larry the Cable Guy, as a coach for the Cleveland Browns. And he made some errors, but I thought Cleveland could have put that game away early, and they kind of let Seattle hang around a little bit, took some bad penalties. And look, credit to Seattle. They got the win, but I think that they're a solid team, but I don't think that they're necessarily an elite team. I think they have that 5-1 record. I think that they're a team that's caught some breaks. So that's why I was maybe looking a little bit more at the Baltimore side. And look, Baltimore has not been impressive after those first couple of weeks. They get a win in Pittsburgh, where Pittsburgh probably should have won the game, but didn't. They don't cover against Cincinnati, even though Cincinnati did backdoor. I think Lamar Jackson has shown that he's a second-year quarterback. I think those games that we saw the first couple of weeks where he put up these stupid numbers were like, okay, he's here, like he's fully developed now, but he's not. I mean, he's still a second-year quarterback, so he's still going to go through some ups and downs and miss some easy throws and not make the reads quickly enough. I do think he's improved, but this is still a work in progress. But a lot of the talk in the media, and that's kind of one thing I use in the NFL, where you can kind of fade the media at times, and you're hearing all the talk, and I think it's rightful talk because I think he's been very good, but all the media refrain this week is Russell Wilson is the MVP. Russell Wilson is the MVP. That's all you've heard on the national talk shows all week in terms of one of the main topics of reference in terms of discussing the weekend that is in the NFL. So I think you're getting a decent dog here. And look, when you look at this line that it's 3.5, when you judge home field advantage, Adam, I have Seattle ranked as one of the highest home fields in the league. If the default home field advantage is 3, and we know some are less, Miami, Jacksonville, Tampa, places like that, maybe their home field is 1.5 or 2. But that means there's some home fields that are 4, 4.5, or 5. And I think Seattle would fall in that category, yet they're only laying 3.5 here. So that tells you that I think that the marketplace and the odds makers kind of value Baltimore and Seattle in the same way and really put those as even teams on a neutral field. So they're not necessarily buying Seattle, and I'm not necessarily either long term.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think it's really important to look at NFL games in that way too, especially ones where, you know, there is a well-defined home field advantage, and there definitely is one here in this game between Baltimore and Seattle. Wes Reynolds is working and find on Twitter at Wes Reynolds, the number one, also regularly on VSiN and in the Point Spread Weekly newsletter. I know there was a schedule change this week, so you're going to be on tonight, but when else can people find you on VSiN?
Yeah, we'll be on tonight from 6 to 10 Pacific time, 9 to 1 Eastern, if you're a night owl, with myself and Brady Cannon. And then tomorrow we do the same 6 to 10 Pacific time tomorrow and Friday. Myself, Brady Cannon, Amal Shaw. And then with the baseball playoffs, now probably not tonight because the game got postponed, but we've been having a former big leaguer Josh Towers, who pitched in the major leagues for several years, appears on the shows, especially during these baseball playoff games. And I think he has interesting insights because he looks at things differently, obviously, as a player, that maybe bettors can really learn from in terms of what decisions a manager is making, how a player is pitching, how he's being called at the plate by an umpire. So he has some interesting insights that I think you can only get from a player. And then over the weekend, 2 to 6 Pacific time on Saturday, kind of in that middle, stretching into the late window of college football games, and 3 to 7 on Sunday for NFL Sunday.
Well, make sure you follow Wes on Twitter again, at Wes Reynolds and the number one. Wes, appreciate your time as always, man. Thank you so much for joining me. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, Adam. Thanks, bud.
There you go. There's Wes Reynolds again, at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter, and you can hear him on VSiN multiple times throughout the week. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, I'll chat with professional handicapper Brad Powers of bradpowerssports.com. We'll talk a lot of college football and also some NFL. Then I'll finish up the show with some of the college games that we didn't get to here on previous segments throughout the week. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.